This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 27th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 227. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I ward a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The Olympics end in China. Russia starts a war. Much apathy over China's human rights abuses, but boycotts aplenty over Putin's invasion of Ukraine. I welcome back sports economist Victor Matheson. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or will the Emergencies Act become a frequently used tool by the federal government to quash protest? Civil libertarians are worried that it will be used more often after Justin Trudeau invoked it for about a week, so that he could clear truckers from downtown Ottawa and away from border crossings. The anti-vaccine mandate movement is misguided. Some of it feeds on disinformation, but many Canadians are losing faith in government's ability to handle the pandemic and the economy. Although it did seem to pop up just in time for Canada to express support for Ukraine, did Russia's foreign meddling campaign pull any strings behind the scenes? Justin Trudeau used it as a wedge issue to score political points. He could have heard them out instead. Ottawa City Hall and the Ottawa Police Department? Well, you could have simply enforced local anti-parking and anti-noise laws, along with provincial truck safety laws. It could have been a one-day inconvenience. Instead, you helped it become a month-long nuisance. Maybe we don't need the Emergencies Act, unless it's a serious emergency again. Maybe just enforce the basic laws, please. It's a lot cheaper in the end. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The two biggest news stories in the world last week, two of the biggest news stories in 2022 so far, the end of the controversial Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics and the start of Putin's invasion of Ukraine, both happened last week. Few countries spoke out over China's human rights abuses against Uyghur Muslims, Tibetans, and Hong Kongers. The games ended on time. There were no boycotts. Meanwhile, an avalanche of boycotts against Russia and its partner Belarus after Russia violated the Olympic truce, a peace measure supposed to last a week after the Paralympics, which haven't even happened yet. Returning to the Breaker.News podcast is guest Victor Matheson, who is one of the world's top sports economists. Professor Matheson is from the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. First, I asked him what will be the legacy of the Beijing Olympics, a ratings disappointment for both NBC in the U.S. and CBC in Canada.
Over the last 3 weeks, the two things that I've heard just my colleagues talking about, either sports economists or just regular folks in the hall, we've heard two things. Number one, the human rights record of China, especially with relationship to the Uyghurs. That's not a great legacy to have if you're China, if you want to say, hey, we're doing this to... games to put China on the map in an important way. I think more people have put the Western provinces of China on the map a lot more than the sporting venues. And the second thing I've heard people talking about is doping by Russian figure skaters. So this is a games where it certainly looks like the bad has overshadowed the good. I haven't heard barely anyone talking about what's happening on the ice, what's happening on the slopes. A little of that obviously is the Americans didn't do as well as they had hoped in some of the events. Some of our top athletes like Mikaela Shiffrin, kind of had a poor Olympics. That being said, again, all the buzz about this Olympics is not about what the athletes were doing, on the ice and on the slopes, but instead what they're doing in preparation in terms of doping, or what the what China's doing with human rights in general, and whether they're just using the Olympics as a way to basically engage in sports washing.
After Russia's Putin violated the Olympic truce and invaded Ukraine, UEFA moved May's Champions League final from St. Petersburg to Paris. The IOC also called for a boycott of events in Belarus and Russia. What does this mean for world sport?
Yeah, so let's give credit to the people who deserve the credit, and let's point out the people who don't deserve the credit. UEFA absolutely deserves credit here. This was absolutely the right move to have them move the Champions League final out of St. Petersburg. Obviously, this is an easy move for UEFA to do because there are lots and lots of cities that could host a Champions League final with about a week or two of preparation. There's lots of good stadiums and lots of good cities with the tourist infrastructure in place right now. So an easy thing for them to do and absolutely the right thing for them to do. But it's not completely costless. Again, there has been time and preparation put into that. Same thing with F1, who has moved their Formula One race out of Russia. And again, this is not costless for them, but again, there are other possible locations to relocate that event to, and so good for them. I'm not going to give the IOC any credit here. The IOC does not have any upcoming events in Russia anytime soon, and so it's pretty easy for them to say, oh, you should move all of your events out of this place that's engaging in serious human rights violations, when they simply didn't do this literally a week ago. So again, no credit to IOC telling others that they should be moving their events when they have not been willing to move their events in similar situations. They also, it's kind of dissimilar situation, but also, problematic is, the insistence of the IOC to go through with the games in Tokyo, when Tokyo and their residents clearly didn't want them in the midst of, a major spike in COVID cases. So again, no credit to the IOC, but absolutely good credit to UEFA and Formula One. What will really be interesting is what happens with FIFA. Number one, is FIFA going to make Russia move the last of its qualifiers out of Russia? That's an easy move, but it'll be interesting to see if that happens. What's the bigger move is if they do a full blanket ban. Now, both FIFA and the IOC and other major sporting organizations are fairly reluctant to ban countries for transgressions committed by their governments. It's not always the athlete's fault that this is part of this is one issue. And, it's a little bit of a slippery slope. I mean, should you ban Russia for invading Ukraine? It's easy to say absolutely yes, they should be kicked out of the World Cup. Okay, but what about China for World Cup or for human rights violations with the Uyghurs? Okay, yeah, maybe that. Well, what about Saudi Arabia engaging in prejudice against women in their own country? What about state sponsors of terrorism? What about that? What about the United States invading Iraq on a pretext? Should we be kicked out of things? So again, that becomes a little more difficult. But I think FIFA's got a tough choice here coming up about whether you allow Russia to stay in the World Cup at all. I think it'll be an easier choice to have them have to play all of their matches not at home, but in a neutral site. I think that I would not at all be surprised for that to happen. The big piece is Russia going to be able to continue to participate in the World Cup? It should be pointed out that losing the Champions League final actually isn't a gigantic dollar amount for St. Petersburg. It's certainly something, probably in the tens of millions of dollars of economic impact loss, certainly not in the hundreds of millions. So it doesn't cost Putin that much in terms of dollars and cents. But let's be quite honest here. Putin's not motivated by dollars and cents, right? If he was, he wouldn't have invaded the Ukraine last week, right? So the issue is, this is about ego. This is about power, and moving the Champions League final hits Putin exactly where it hurts. It takes away this showpiece and this showcase event that Putin gets to, that Putin would have gotten to stand there at center field handing out trophies, and now he's relegated to not playing any part in this, what's essentially the world's biggest single one-day event.
The next mega event is the FIFA World Cup later this year in Qatar. Canada is on the verge of qualifying for the first time since 1986. 2022 is also 4 years before Canada co-hosts with the US and Mexico. The last time Canada hosted a FIFA event was the 2015 Women's World Cup. After a legal battle almost 7 years long, the Breaker.news has finally obtained a copy of the contract via Freedom of Information. It shows how taxpayers in BC subsidize FIFA, one of the world's richest, most controversial sports organizations. The story that you can read on the Breaker.news says lawyers for the Canadian Soccer Association had said in 2020 that if the contract was made public, the World Cup may not come to Canada in 2026. But they did an about-face in February 2022, while the BC government negotiates with FIFA to bring World Cup games to BC Place in 2026. I asked my guest, Victor Matheson of College of the Holy Cross, why do governments write big checks to FIFA?
Well, first of all, they believe, I think wrongly in most cases, but they believe there's a huge economic windfall from hosting these events. So, for example, again, Vancouver subsidized the IOC and put on an entire Winter Olympics for them, you know, not too long ago, what, 12 years ago now, right? And that was a multi-billion dollar event that cost Vancouver a huge amount of money, did not return economic returns enough to cover those costs. Yet the IOC walked away with several billion dollars worth of TV revenue, most of which they pocketed themselves. They did share some with Vancouver there. But they pocketed that money themselves. And again, basically, that's the way the Olympics works, is the IOC grants those cities the right to use the name the Olympics in exchange for those host cities bearing all the costs. And that's the same sort of thing that happens with FIFA as well, right? So FIFA grants the city the right to host these games. The city hopes that they'll get a bunch of tourism. And of course, some tourism did occur there. I mean, I personally went up and saw some games in Montreal and in Ottawa. So, you know, I put some money into the Canadian economy because they hosted those games. The question is whether, you know, it was worth the $2 million investment that Vancouver had and the probably similar levels of investment that you had in other host cities.
What do you think about that, about organizations like FIFA, like the IOC that demand so much, including the taxpayer subsidies, but when it comes to transparency, they give so little?
Yeah, well, you're just basically setting this one up for me to hit out of the park, right? Because this is something that economists like myself have complained about for years. Again, we don't think that an organization like FIFA should be subsidized by local governments. Again, remember, FIFA makes about $4 billion every four-year cycle. And again, almost all that money comes from the Men's World Cup. A smaller slice of that comes from Women's World Cup and other tournaments. But they make about $4 billion from the Men's World Cup. So, when we're talking about, setting aside $1 million or $2 million to rent a stadium so that you can have your $4 billion tournament take place, when you're talking about spending, $3 or $4 million on venues, a few million dollars transporting referees around and things like this. I mean, let's be serious here. The World Cup is absolutely a way to mint money, and there is no reason that FIFA shouldn't be paying its own way. I mean, again, FIFA is making $4 billion on a tournament that costs virtually nothing to put on, right? Again, you're talking about stadiums that are already in place. When you're talking about a U.S. Canada Mexico bid, you're talking about an event where the stadiums are in place, the hospitality facilities are in place, the transportation networks are in place. You're talking about tiny amounts of money to actually run the games in comparison to what you bring in. Now, mind you, it says, well, we have to spend all this money on the players. Well, look, the players are part of this whole organization. And of course, they deserve to be paid for their participation in this. But there's no reason that, again, taxpayers in Vancouver or, in Boston, like where I am, should be subsidizing a private entity run by millionaires generating billions of dollars. That shouldn't be being done with taxpayer money.
That was my guest, Victor Matheson, sports economist from the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. We'll have more from him on the Breaker.news podcast next week. Now it's time on the Breaker.news.
podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Taiwan news, Chinese censorship instructions for Ukraine leaked. Chinese Communist Party mouthpiece orders content unfavorable to Russia or pro-Western to be censored. Horizon News, part of CCP-owned Beijing News, accidentally leaked its internal directives for reporting on Russia's invasion of Ukraine in a Weibo post on February 22nd, revealing that it would only publish pro-Kremlin content. An editor at Xinhua News Agency later posted on Weibo that China needs to emotionally and morally support Russia now, since China will also need Russia's understanding and support when wrestling with America to solve the Taiwan issue once and for all. In Hong Kong Free Press, a madhouse, overstays, suicide attempts, chaotic management at Hong Kong's overloaded Penny's Bay COVID facility. Hong Kong's fifth wave of COVID-19 has been infecting thousands daily and has put medical and isolation facilities over their maximum capacity. There are now around 1,000 patients at Penny's Bay on Lantau Island. In Mainichi News, Japanese trio sings Ukrainian national anthem on YouTube, prompting flood of thanks. The all-female trio aims to support world peace by singing national anthems from around the globe. They have previously posted videos of the national anthems of countries where Yokohama has sister cities, including Manila in the Philippines, Mumbai in India, and Vancouver in Canada. Odessa, a Ukrainian port city, is one of those sister cities. Yokohama and Odessa became sister cities in 1965. Here are some sounds of the Yokohama sisters singing the Ukrainian national anthem. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregon bill requiring royalty payments to college athletes from sales of jerseys, video games, trading cards passes state legislature. Numerous institutions have announced the framework for similar royalty payments for jersey sales for their athletes, including the University of Michigan, Ohio State University, and University of Utah. If signed, SB 1505 would make Oregon and Pennsylvania the only states with laws requiring such royalties. In King 5 News, Rick Steves among tour operators canceling trips to Russia following invasion of Ukraine. Rick Steves, who has a travel show and has written guidebooks, has built a business that, in pre-COVID times, was taking 30,000 travelers to Europe each year. After Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Steves posted on social media, quote, "When we bring travelers to another country, we also bring their dollars, dollars that would support Putin's aggression. Therefore, as of today, we have canceled all 2022 tours that include a stop in Russia." End quote. In the Victoria Times-Colonist, court says Beacon Hill Park cannot be used for temporary sheltering. The City of Victoria filed a petition last spring asking the court to clarify whether the park can be used by people without homes for temporary sheltering. Beacon Hill Park is held in trust by the city under an 1882 Crown grant by the province. Unhoused people began camping in parks when the pandemic saw many shelters sharply reducing their capacity because of new distancing rules. After the number of tents swelled in the 900 block of Pandora Avenue, campers were allowed to move to Topaz and Beacon Hill Parks. Some also camped next to the Crystal Pool. The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. a virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the memory of Steve Fonio, whose journey ended February 18th. He was 56 when he died. Fonio raised $14 million for cancer research when he ran across Canada in 1984 and 1985, a triumph that was followed by so many tragedies. He lost a leg to cancer when he was 12, but most of his life was swallowed directly or indirectly by addiction. A reminder that we need to find a cure for both cancer and addiction. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 27th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 27th of February in 1991, during the first Gulf War, U.S. President George Bush I announced the liberation of Kuwait? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.